I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Michael Cohen, President Trump's former personal attorney, testified in public before the House Oversight Committee yesterday. The former Trump ally withstood a barrage of attacks from Republicans while painting a picture of a president who is a corrupt bigot. Cohen is going to jail for lying to Congress the last time. Was he telling the truth this time around? Josh Gerstein, senior legal affairs contributor at Politico, and Elaine Kmart, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, join me with analysis of Michael Cohen's day under the Klieg lights. Plus, J. Wynn Russick interviews the playwright Paula Vogel about Indecent, her latest play that opens in previews at Baltimore Center Stage tonight. That's all coming up on Midday, right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Also want to thank everybody who showed up last night to the Mount Vernon Marketplace. We had a lot of fun. Particular shout out to Chino, our good buddy at Pinch. That's where I was bartending with our executive and senior producer, Rob Sivek. And folks from WYPR were spread all around Mount Vernon Marketplace, pouring some beer and some wine and some cocktails for the folks who came out to hang with us last night. So thanks to everybody who came. Thanks to everybody who's listening. And thanks to everybody, of course, who supports WYPR. Michael Cohen, President Trump's former lawyer, is at this hour testifying on Capitol Hill for the third consecutive day. On Tuesday, he appeared in closed session before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Today, he is speaking with members of the House Intelligence Committee, also in a closed session. Yesterday, in 7 hours of televised testimony before the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, Cohen was contrite for his past prevarication to Congress and vehement in his depiction of his former boss as a bigot, a con man, and a person not unacquainted with prevarication himself. So what did we learn from Cohen's testimony? Was Cohen credible? What did his public testimony portend for future hearings? We start our conversation today with Josh Gerstein, the senior legal affairs contributor to Politico. He joins us on the line from Alexandria, Virginia. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you.
And listeners, if you'd like to chime in and give us your take on Mr. Cohen's testimony yesterday, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. So, Josh, right at the top of his opening statement yesterday, Mr. Cohen said, I recognize that some of you may doubt and attack me on my credibility. It is for this reason that I have incorporated into this opening statement documents that are irrefutable and demonstrate that the information you will hear is accurate and truthful. What do you think? Did he live up to that promise? Did he have sufficient corroboration for the charges that he levied?
He had some corroboration for some of the charges that he put forward. I mean, perhaps the most intriguing thing was the check that he displayed that showed that President Trump had himself signed one of these $35,000 monthly reimbursements that Cohen received, which we're told was part of a way of paying Cohen back for money he laid out to resolve the Stormy Daniels situation. Right before the 2016 election. She's, of course, the porn star who had alleged a sexual encounter with Trump and was threatening to go public with that basically before the election. And she received $130,000 that Michael Cohen basically had sent to her. Cohen ended up taking that out of a home equity line on his home in order to get it. So we saw that Trump was directly involved in making those reimbursements. That was a jarring thing to see. I think a lot of the other documents were, perhaps sort of eye candy for those that were there or available as some degree of verification for some of the anecdotes Cohen was relating. But some of the most significant things that Cohen had to say, we don't really know what the corroboration for that is. He said again and again, he thinks the prosecutors are looking into it or special counsel Robert Mueller is looking into it and that they may have more proof of things that he said, for example, about claims that the president was told in advance of a release of emails by WikiLeaks. Pretty much we're just going by Cohen's word on that.
And of course, if in fact Mr. Mueller does ultimately assert that, for example, Mr. Trump knew about the WikiLeaks situation before it happened, one would assume that Michael Cohen wouldn't be Mueller's only witness to that. He would have additional information that would corroborate. I mean, no one is thinking that Michael Cohen is ever going to be the sole person upon whom any case rests, whether it's Mr. Mueller or the Southern District of New York.
Right. And so far, the prosecutors, especially those up in New York, have been very careful, as you say, Tom, really not to make even, let alone a case, even an assertion based solely on information that Michael Cohen has provided. I'm struck that in the case that they did file against Cohen over illegal campaign donations related to this payment to Stormy Daniels and another payment made or that was going to be made through the National Enquirer to Karen McDougal, another woman who claimed to have had an affair with Trump. Even there, prosecutors didn't go so far as to say that Trump had done something illegal or that somebody at the Trump Organization did something illegal. They simply laid out the facts that Cohen was admitting that his intent was to affect the election and that therefore this was illegal, at least from his perspective. We've now had an admission of sorts from the National Enquirer folks that they shouldn't have done this and that I'm not sure if they've outright admitted that it violated campaign finance law, but they basically agreed not to do anything like this again and to put into effect safeguards to prevent it from happening. So prosecutors are being very careful not to reiterate or attempt to reassert any of Cohen's claims, because remember, the main thing that they have charged him with is lying and falsehoods and submitting false tax returns and things along those lines, and he's admitted to those charges. So standing alone, he's not the kind of person, I think, whose word you'd want to take for just about anything. At least you wouldn't feel you could take it to the bank.
And, of course, Republicans kept harping on the fact that he had lied to Congress and that he'd had any number of instances in his private business dealings in which he appeared to lie to banks and that sort of thing. So it was sort of making the argument, if you've lied once, then you are forever and a day a liar. And it appeared that he did say some things yesterday that were at the very least inconsistent with the public record, one of which had to do with whether or not he sought a job in the White House. It's been widely reported that he was very eager to be appointed to some position, perhaps even chief of staff, in the Trump White House after the election, and that did not come to pass, and that he was disconcerted and disappointed by that. But yesterday, he, under oath, said that that's not the case. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that was sort of the most puzzling assault on his credibility yesterday. I mean, we all expected he would face the kind of questions you're talking about having admitted to lying in the past. But he was so adamant that he had never sought any job at the White House, and that, in fact, he was happy to continue to serve as President Trump's personal lawyer, which is actually something that Cohen had on his email signature at one time. And so it is a puzzling discrepancy. There are numerous people, including Donald Trump Jr., including David Bossie, who is working in the White House for Trump, were repeatedly saying that they knew that Cohen was seeking a White House job and maybe even thought he should be chief of staff. Cohen never said that to me, so I can't say for a fact that he's lying about that, but it is curious that there are so many people willing to say on the record, these are not anonymous sources, that they knew for a fact Cohen was seeking such a job and had reached out to them personally. To have him deny it is a puzzling discrepancy, and I do think it does do some damage to his credibility to have multiple people out there saying that they think that what he's saying on that point is false. But, you know, on a lot of the other points he made, they essentially become sort of a he said between Cohen and President Trump, who, you know, also has had various issues with his veracity. So it becomes very hard on some of these matters to know what actually transpired or to know exactly whose word you should take.
He kind of resuscitated a charge that was made in a BuzzFeed news report that Mr. Trump had directed him to lie to Congress. Now, Mr. Mueller's office made the extraordinary did an extraordinary thing in which they came out and essentially denied the veracity of that report. But yesterday, Cohen kind of hedged it a little bit, but he said that the direction to lie to Congress was more implicit than explicit, and that that was just the way that that Mr. Trump rolls, and everybody who worked for him understood it in that sense. That's kind of interesting, because here we have Mueller denying, or apparently, you know, saying that that assertion is not true, and here's Mr. Cohen kind of making it again.
Right. You know, this is something that you can come at from several different perspectives. There are aspects of that BuzzFeed report that Cohen still does not substantiate or support in terms of the timing of these instructions from the president. In terms of, there were words in there like the president had personally instructed him to do it, which doesn't sound exactly like the kind of wink and nod thing that was being described by Cohen in his testimony. But nonetheless, it remains Cohen's general position that the president wanted him to lie, and it was clear to him that the president wanted him to lie specifically about this issue of how advanced the Trump Tower Moscow project was, and also the question of how actively that kind of a development project was being pursued during the 2016 campaign. The White House had taken the position, and the campaign took the position, and the president said that he basically had no business in Moscow or in Russia. And Cohen asserts that they were actively working on trying to secure that deal sometime until around June, I think it is, of 2016. And, you know, Cohen, however, didn't really made clear how Trump had instructed him to lie about that. It was simply said that it was implicit. Part of it was signals such as, you know, sending a copy of his testimony to Congress, to White House lawyers or lawyers for the president, and not being told, hey, don't say that because it's not true. So I felt that still remained a little bit murky at the conclusion of yesterday's hearing in terms of, you know, how explicitly one could say that the president had encouraged Cohen to provide false testimony to Congress.
And as I mentioned at the top of the show, today is the third day of Mr. Cohen's testimony before congressional and Senate committees, House and Senate committees. So the totality of that, well, it sort of remains to be seen whether or not this will be damaging to Mr. Trump, or whether it'll inform in any significant way the Mueller investigation. It may also remains to be seen whether or not this is damaging or even advantageous to Mr. Cohen, who, you know, perhaps in the back of his mind at least is hoping that his 3-year sentence could be somewhat reduced if yesterday, Tuesday and today qualify as, you know, cooperating. But I wonder, you wrote a piece with your colleagues in Politico about the collateral damage to the Trump family and the inner circle, Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka, Eric Trump. Talk a little bit about what the ramifications of yesterday's public hearing might be for the rest of the family.
Well, so these names came up again and again during the course of this day-long hearing. At times, Cohen went so far as to say that Trump Organization officials, which include the longtime chief financial officer there, Alan Weisselberg, as well as people like Donald Trump Jr., were engaged in a criminal conspiracy, I guess, with him on these campaign finance issues by signing checks and things along those lines, and by trying to not just make this payment to Stormy Daniels, but to essentially cover it up in the records of the Trump Organization. Some of those claims, Cohen seemed like he was being kind of prodded or pushed into it by Democrats. They weren't necessarily part of his prepared statement, and there'd be kind of a leading question, don't you agree that all these people have engaged in a criminal conspiracy? And Cohen would say yes or something like that. So it's still unclear how that will play out for some of these figures. You know, again, he said he sent this false testimony that he was going to give to a variety of lawyers. He named Abby Lowell, who'd worked as a and has worked as a lawyer for Jared Kushner and for Ivanka Trump. He named Jay Sekulow, who's one of the president's personal attorneys, saying that they got copies of this testimony before it was given, not the testimony yesterday, but the testimony from a year or two ago that now Cohen has admitted was false, and that they even edited it and but never raised questions about this central falsehood. So there were a number of people who took shots here as the testimony went on. They obviously were not there to speak for themselves or to respond to the allegations. And I mean, it's worth remembering that it's very unlikely that Cohen said anything yesterday that either Robert Mueller or prosecutors in New York have not heard before. And it did seem at the end of the day that perhaps the greatest danger in terms of future investigation for the president and the Trump organization generally might be things that didn't even come up at the hearing, but have more to do with the general business practices of the Trump organization, of things like applying for insurance and bank loans. Cohen said that it was pretty routine there for Trump to exaggerate his financial statements in those kinds of situations, and doing that can be a pretty serious offense. Cohen made cryptic statements that federal prosecutors in New York are looking at some of those issues, and he wouldn't get into them in great detail. But one interesting disclosure that did come out very much at the end of the hearing, brought out by the new, rather famous Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York, was about Trump's taxes and his persistent claim that he couldn't release his taxes because they were under audit. Cohen said he was one of those people who repeatedly made those assertions during the campaign, but that he doesn't believe they actually were under audit. And he repeatedly asked Trump folks if he could have a letter so he could prove that they were under audit, and it was never provided to him.
Yeah, one of many questions that was left certainly unanswered, but one of many questions raised in the hearing yesterday. Josh Gerstein is the senior legal affairs contributor at Politico. Josh, I appreciate the time and all of your coverage of this very important story. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up later today, a conversation with the playwright Paula Vogel. She'll talk with our theater critic Jay Wynn Russick about her latest play, Indecent, which opens at Baltimore Center Stage tonight. But first, quick break, and then more on Michael Cohen's public testimony. We'll try to sneak in a phone call or two if we can. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To drop us a tweet, @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, @TomHall. WYPR. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, it's the Midday News Wrap. President Trump has left Vietnam abruptly, cutting short the second round of talks with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. 8 months after the two heads of state first came together for an historic summit in Singapore, they appear to have left Hanoi empty-handed. I'll speak with the political economist and North Korea specialist Nicholas Eberstadt from the American Enterprise Institute, and we'll get his take on the prospects for peace on the Korean Peninsula. Here at home, a month after a unanimous no vote, the Baltimore School Board has voted in favor of legislation that would authorize school resource officers to carry firearms. Plus, Havre de Grace Democratic delegate Mary Ann Lasanti is under increasing pressure to resign following her use of the N-word when referencing Prince George's County. We'll check in with Baltimore Sun reporter Luke Broadwater for a roundup of these and other local stories. That's all coming up tomorrow on the Midday News Wrap. Also coming up tomorrow, a new exhibit at the Goya Contemporary Gallery pays homage to the civil rights activist and entrepreneur Madam C.J. Walker. We'll talk about it tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we are discussing Michael Cohen's public appearance before the House Oversight and Reform Committee yesterday. Here's Mr. Cohen beginning his opening statement.
I am here under oath to correct the record, to answer the committee's questions truthfully, and to offer the American people what I know about President Trump, because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist. He is a con man, and he is a cheat.
We turn now to Elaine Kmark from the Brookings Institution, where she is senior fellow in the Governance Studies Program and the director of the Center for Effective Public Management. She joins us on the line from the studios at Brookings in Washington, D.C. Elaine, welcome to Midday.
Well, thanks for having me.
And to join our conversation, listeners, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. So, Elaine, you are a student of history. You are an historian and researcher about all things presidential politics, et cetera. Was yesterday as historic a day as people were describing it before it happened? Now that the dust has begun to settle a little bit, at least from the public part of Mr. Cohen's testimony, was it historic or was it hype?
Well, I don't think it was quite as historic as the last similar episode in American history, which is when John Dean testified in front of the Senate about the Watergate conspiracy. And what John Dean did then was connect the dots between a lot of sort of disparate issues that had come up and connected them all directly back to the committee to reelect the president, at that point Richard Nixon, and to Richard Nixon, the committee's kind of nefarious approach to winning reelection in 1972. That really riveted the country because there were so many questions. I think yesterday Michael Cohen was certainly following in John Dean's footsteps. He was clearly looking for redemption for himself and his reputation, but I'm not sure that the testimony itself shed as much light on President Trump as John Dean's did on Richard Nixon many decades ago.
And it's interesting. Mr. Dean's name came up right at the very beginning of the hearing as Republicans moved to postpone the hearing, complaining that Lanny Davis, Michael Cohen's lawyer, had consulted with John Dean and that, in fact, John Dean had commented on Mr. Cohen's opening statement the night before in a television appearance. That was a kind of a bizarre moment. And Chairman,
yes.
Chairman Cummings just sort of, you know, said, well, thanks, but no thanks. We're not going to entertain
yeah.
that. But what do you make of that? I mean, is it a bad thing that Lanny Davis is consulting with John Dean? And
I mean, it was totally bizarre. It really had nothing to do with anything that was going to go on at the hearing, although it is of historic interest because obviously this is not the first time, by the way, that Lanny Davis has consulted John Dean because his client, Michael Cohen, is in fact in a very, very similar position of having a lot of close and damaging information about a sitting president of the United States who may in fact face impeachment proceedings.
Elaine Kmark is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She joins me here on Midday. We're talking about Michael Cohen's testimony before the House Oversight and Reform Committee. Dan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. As a former Republican, now kind of leaning Democrat, it's such a disturbing time, of course, to become politically aware. But I was listening to the character assassination that was taking place all on the Republican side yesterday, and I thought it was so ironic that they would spend so much time talking about Cohen as a liar and assassinate his character, as I was saying, and yet miss the point that Donald Trump hired him for a decade to be his personal attorney, his personal lawyer. And I just thought, and this is really a question, it's just a comment, that doesn't anybody ever see that this reflects back on Trump just as much as the comments that they were trying to make to discredit Cohen?
Yeah, well, thanks for that. Thanks for the call, Dan. And of course, when it comes to reflecting, Elaine Kmark, we've got an awful lot of people who've been indicted, who've been convicted, who have pled guilty, who will be serving prison time or who've already served prison time in Mr. Trump's direct circle. Do you think yesterday, by the time it was over, that the status, what's your take on the status for the appetite of Congress to begin impeachment proceedings? Do you think they went up yesterday?
Well, I think Dan's comment was very astute, because if you watch what happened yesterday, none of the Republicans tried to defend the president. All they tried to do was take down his former lawyer. Now, his lawyer has admitted to crimes, is on his way to jail. The lawyer has very little incentive to keep lying. In fact, if the lawyer keeps lying, his jail sentence is going to get even worse, and his possibility for a shortened jail term is going to get even worse. So yes, of course he lied. He admitted he lied. But the question is he still lying? And I don't think that what came through yesterday at all. The appetite for impeachment, however, is not very strong in the Congress, including among Democrats. Now, there are those Democrats on the fringes who kind of talk about it obsessively. But, you know, Democrats really are of two minds about this. They, on the one hand, they think that it's probably the case that there have been some impeachable crimes committed, probably in the area of obstruction of justice. On the other hand, the Democrats will wait to see what happens in the Republican Party before moving, because they know that impeachment is so serious that it has to be bipartisan. Nobody wants to repeat the travesty of the Clinton impeachment, where basically it was the Republicans against the Democrats. In the end, Clinton was not convicted. In fact, during impeachment, his party actually gained seats in the House of Representatives. So that nobody wants to do that again. In the Nixon impeachment, on the other hand, what happened was that the Republican Party, both in the House but especially in the Senate, essentially said, we don't think this man can be president anymore. And in fact, the reason Nixon was never formally impeached or went to trial is that Barry Goldwater and other Republican stalwarts in the Senate went to the Oval Office and said, you're going to get impeached, you're going to be convicted, we don't have the votes to save you. And that prompted Richard Nixon to resign. And so he was never, even though we talk about Watergate and impeachment, Nixon was never actually impeached, nor was he convicted. He resigned ahead of all of it.
You've worked in Democratic politics for a long time. You remember the Democratic National Committee. You've worked on several presidential campaigns in your career. It's interesting to me that the Republicans attacked Mr. Cohen as a liar repeatedly. But of course, Mr. Trump himself has been, it's widely documented that Mr. Trump prevaricates and makes mendacious statements with regularity. As a Democratic strategist, is this a good talking point for the left when it comes to Donald Trump, to say you can't make accusations about lying as if that's a big deal with Mr. Cohen, as long as you have a president who's quite prone to fabrication himself?
I think Democrats have made that argument continually, but we're in an interesting time here. President Trump has almost no support among Democrats, and he has way less than 50% support among independents. The only place his support holds is among a Republican Party that has gotten very, very polarized in terms of supporting him no matter what. And I think for our listeners, the thing to watch in the coming months is not what the Democrats do. The Democrats are opposed to Donald Trump, think he's a liar, think he has committed crimes, etc. But it's not what the Democrats do. It's what do the Republicans do? Are there breaks in Republican support of the president? We certainly didn't see it yesterday at the Cohen hearing. We might see it, however, in the next few weeks when the Senate goes to vote on the emergency measure that the president has on the wall. And we might see some breaks in the Republican support there. But the trick here, by the way, or the piece of advice is watch the Republican Party for what may happen to President Trump.
Yeah, last I checked, the support for president among Republicans was, you know, in the high 80s, low 90 percentile. I mean, it's yeah. overwhelming.
Very, very strong. But with one caveat, which is there is some evidence that it is a shrinking Republican Party, that Republicans are moving into the independent category. And so you can still maintain 90%, but if the 90% is of 30% as opposed to 33% or something like that, you know, it's not as overwhelming as it would seem.
We have an email from Peggy who references the racial moment, one of them that occurred mm-hmm. yesterday when Mark Meadows, who famously said when he was running for election in 2012 that we're going to send Barack Obama back to Kenya, he had a woman named Lynn Patton stand up. People accused him of using her as a prop. She denied that that's what she was, and she remains an ardent supporter of Mr. Trump. She is in his employ, evidently, of the Trump Organization. But what'd you make of that moment?
Oh, I thought it was kind of pathetic and kind of awkward, right? To say that somebody is not a racist because and to have testimony come from somebody who you pay, just, you know, come on. I mean, I thought it was a sort of silly moment. The poor woman stood there very awkwardly. She never said a word. She kind of disappeared. I think the whole thing fell very flat. I think one of Donald Trump's many problems is that a lot of people do think, with some good reason, that he is a racist. And Michael Cohen, you know, certainly talked to that effect yesterday.
I've heard some talking head types make the comment that any president, Republican or Democratic, would be upset, would look scornfully on the Democrats' decision to hold this hearing while Mr. Trump was involved in a summit in Vietnam concerning North Korea. In terms of the optics of that, I mean, you know, Chairman Cummings mm-hmm. certainly could have delayed it a couple of days or until next week. And Mr. Trump himself complained about that in his press conference before he left Vietnam. What do you make of that decision by Chairman Cummings to hold the hearing while the president was away?
You know, I think it's not terribly important. I think that the Michael Cohen was supposed to come earlier in February. In fact, this hearing, because we were watching to figure out what we should write about it and how we should look at it here, this hearing was scheduled at least two times before yesterday. So it was kind of moving around for reasons I don't quite understand, probably having to do with the legal machinations. And it ended up coinciding with Mr. Trump's visit to Vietnam. But I don't think it's one of the deep, dark conspiracies that people would like to make it out to be.
Mr. Trump chose to highlight the fact that, as a matter of fact, he even called himself impressed by the fact that Mr. Cohen said that there was no collusion. Now, of course, mm-hmm. Mr. Cohen didn't say that exactly, but Mr. Trump wanted to sort of, you know, gloss over everything Mr. Cohen said, with the exception of what he didn't say. But do you think Mr. Trump, in fact, picked up some support, given the fact that here's Mr. Cohen not able to say anything other than speculation about whether or not the campaign was working with the Russians?
Well, this business about collusion, which President Trump has insisted upon from the get-go, he says it over and over and over again, is, I think, meant to distract from other things that the Mueller report is likely to unearth. It is very possible that, of course, President Trump never said to Putin, "Hey, buddy, you know, help me win this election here." Okay, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a tape or an NSA intercept that comes out that says something like that. And that's sort of the standard that the president is trying to set. The problem is that as this investigation is worn on, it has taken interesting turns, as they always do. And while there is the Mueller investigation, which I think will concentrate on the connections to Russia, what it has done is opened up an entirely new area of investigation, most of which is being pursued not by anybody in Washington, but by the Southern District of New York. And we saw a lot of that yesterday in the testimony. This is Donald Trump's business and his business practices and the big business practices of his children are going to be examined as they have never been examined before. And Donald Trump may find himself, whenever he becomes an ex-president, substantially less wealthy than he is now.
We just have less than a minute left, Elaine. But, of course, Mr. Cohen was hated by the left and adored by the right before yesterday when that flipped, and now he's the savior of the left and the demon of the right. In general, in the 30 seconds, did Mr. Cohen come off as a credible witness given his history?
I think he did. I think he did. And it's mostly because he is going to go to jail. Right. He's going to jail. The most he can get out of this is maybe down the line a reduced sentence. But the guy has already kind of hit bottom. And I think that he was a credible witness just because of the circumstances in which he came to this trial.
Elaine
or
Kmark,
to this conference.
Yeah, committee. Elaine Kmark is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and the director of the Center for Effective Public Management. Elaine, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Quick break, and when we return, J. Wynn Russick will speak with the Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Paula Vogel about a new production of her groundbreaking play Indecent that opens at Baltimore's Center Stage in previews tonight. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.